Good evening, friends. Good to be with you. Very grateful for your devotion to the Lord. I want to take us back in the Bible to the time when the people of God came out of Babylonian captivity because they were defeated, the Babylonians were, by Persia. And so Cyrus gives the decree by the influence of God to release the people. And they begin to come back in three different waves or three different stages. And after the first stage, the temple was rebuilt. And before the second and third groups could return, the story of Esther takes place. Because that's when the fourth king of Persia, or the fourth after Cyrus, is reigning. And the events of this book occur at that time, with King Ahasuerus having authority of Persia. And in fact, if you look at the book of Ezra, it's divided by six chapters. The first six chapters deal with the temple being rebuilt, and then Ezra 7 through 10 is when Ezra arrives. But in between those chapters, so to speak, is when the events of Esther would have occurred. And if you read the book of Esther, you know that it essentially centers around this woman being selected to be the queen. We understand that the queen at the time was demoted, if you will, by Ahasuerus, who was feeling festive and was wanting to show off the riches of his glorious kingdom, is how the book of Esther begins in chapter 1 and verse 4. And he wanted to show off his wife, who was a very beautiful woman. And yet she refused to be displayed like that. And as a result, he eventually had to replace her as queen. And so she was removed, is what it says in Esther chapter 1 and verse 19. And as a result, the decision was made to find another woman throughout the kingdom who could be selected by the king. And that's where Esther comes in. That she was one of the many women who were selected throughout the kingdom, because the decree was made to go and find a young, beautiful virgin for the king, Esther chapter 2 and in verse 2. And these women were engaged in the beauty contest of the century, in that they had to prepare themselves 12 months to get ready to meet the king. It talks about how in verse 12 of Esther chapter 2, that they would have 12 months of preparation, 6 months of oil, and 6 months of perfumes. So that's quite a serious task there to get these women ready. And of course, Esther was one who was among the group of women. And she was not only among that group, she was the one who won the king's heart because of who she was as a person. And it says in Esther chapter 2 and verse 17, the king loved Esther more than all the other women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins. So he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Well, one thing about Esther at this time in the story is that she did not reveal to him that she was a Hebrew, that she was a Jew. That's because of the influence of Mordecai. So that's a factor as the story unfolds. And so he sees her not as a person who had been captured. But as you go through this story, I believe one thing that can be observed from this woman and the events of this tremendous book that God has given us is that one person can make a difference. I believe that's a rule and a principle that we can adopt and we can meditate on from time to time, that one person can have a positive influence, one person can have a detrimental influence, but one person can make a difference in a sphere, in a circle, in a body of people. And I see that occurring frequently in this story, and I would like to observe that with you for a few minutes this evening. For instance, I believe this story shows us that one person can help. All it takes is one person to get the tide stemming in a positive direction. And I see that with Mordecai, who was a relative of Esther. And in fact, he's the one that eventually raised Esther after her parents died, is what it says in Esther chapter 2, that Mordecai had brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother. The young woman was lovely and beautiful. When her father and mother died, Mordecai took her as his own daughter. So you have this influence in her life. And she's a woman that is dependent on him, but she's also a person who is influenced by him. And because he had this love and this generosity and this compassion that seemed to be a character trait of his, as a result, he had a tremendous influence on this woman. This character trait is seen even more so when it says in Esther chapter 2 that he learned about a plot to kill the king. And he didn't remain silent on that. It says in Esther chapter 2 in verse 21 beginning, "In those days, while Mordecai sat within the king's gate, two of the king's eunuchs, Bigthan and Teresh, doorkeepers, became furious and sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. So the matter became known to Mordecai, who told Queen Esther. And Esther informed the king in Mordecai's name. And when an inquiry was made into the matter, it was confirmed, and both were hanged on a gallows. And it was rewritten in the book of the Chronicles in the presence of the king." Well, that wouldn't have happened. That wouldn't have happened had Mordecai remained silent. That would not have happened had he been indifferent to the threat against the king. So here's a man who seems to be compassionate, seems to have a nerve within him that was sensitive to other people and was concerned about other people. It wasn't just with his relative who was left an orphan. It wasn't just with the king. But as you read the story of Esther, you know that eventually the decree was made to wipe out all the Jews. And when that decree was made, it says that Mordecai wept for his nation. In Esther chapter 4, in the first four verses, it mentions the fact that when Mordecai learned all that had happened, he tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and ashes and went out into the midst of the city. He cried out with a loud and bitter cry. He went as far as the front of the king's gate, for no one might enter the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. And in every province where the king's command and decree arrived, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, and wailing, and many lay in sackcloth and ashes. So Esther's maids and eunuchs came and told her, and the queen was deeply distressed. Then she sent garments to clothe Mordecai and take his sackcloth away from him, but he would not accept them. So here's a man who felt compassion for his nation. When this great threat was upon them, he didn't remain indifferent. He didn't look how to save his own neck, but rather he cried. Cried knowing that they didn't deserve this and knowing that there were innocent people going to suffer from this. It affected him. And as a result, he responded. In Esther chapter 4, what we see is here's a man who had Esther's ear. Because when this decree was made to annihilate the Jews, Mordecai let Esther know, please don't think that just because you're the queen that you're going to somehow bypass this. It's going to include you as well. In Esther chapter 4, it talks about in verses 15 through 17, Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, "Go gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me. Neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will fast likewise, and so I will go to the king, which is against the law. And if I perish, I perish." So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther commanded him. Now, one of the regulations in place was you just could not approach this king without reservations. I mean, it was a safety feature. Nobody could approach the king, and if they did so without consent or without even his approval, it was a death sentence. And that included her. She understood that. And yet Mordecai said, you can't hold to that excuse. You ignore this situation, you let our people die, eventually it's going to include you as well. And so she said, okay, go tell Mordecai, I'm going. If I die, I die. But tell my uncle what I am doing. And so you can see that attachment there. You can see how she was influenced by him. And again, how he had her ear. Do you not realize that you can influence somebody? that you have the ability to persuade somebody's thinking, to persuade their convictions, to move them in a different direction through your influence, through your ability to have an effect on their character. That's what influence means. Influence is defined as the capacity to have an effect on character, development, or behavior on someone or something. And you have that. You and I have that built within us. We can either encourage somebody or influence somebody to do good, or we can influence them to do evil. It's all a part of us. And it's something that is inherent to us. And what the Bible teaches is that we can use that for good. Met a man one time who was telling me about his past. And he was a man who was a chain smoker. I mean, he said he literally was a chain smoker. He smoked 3 packs a day. How's that possible? But he said he would light one up right after another, 3 packs a day. And the middle of his age, he had to have open heart surgery because of the way he was living. And the doctor told him that if he did not quit smoking, that within a year's time he would be back in there doing the same thing again because of the destructive effect it was having on his body. And all that shook him up. That was enough to convince him that he wanted to quit this habit. And so he said right then and there, he made the decision, let's just get rid of this. He had to be in the hospital a few days anyway without smoking. And so he took it one day at a time and he quit smoking. Now he said it wasn't easy. There were times over the years where he would hold a cigarette in front of his mouth with a lighter and he wanted to light up, but he did not because he didn't want to go backwards. And so he quit. But as a result of quitting, he was demanding the same of those who knew him. He said his family, who were chain smokers as well, he set the rule in his house that they had to leave the house if they wanted to smoke. They had to go outside. He said, I told them, I don't care if it's 40 degrees outside, you're not smoking in this house. And so his family eventually, they themselves quit smoking. And then in the workplace, he said that eventually people within the workplace, in the office, quit smoking. That was before Kentucky made that law where you couldn't smoke in public. And so there were smokers there at the office. But they saw his example. They saw what happened to him with the heart surgery. But they saw how he quit. And if he could quit, I could quit. And so eventually, his coworkers quit. And this was years ago when all of this happened. And it's, of course, still a positive effect in their lives today. Influence. Your influence. You set an example. You have conviction. You have traits about you. And as a result, you have the ability to persuade others to do the same thing. Paul says in Philippians chapter 1 that he was able to do that with the gospel and with brethren, with the church. He was able to influence churches to be stronger in their faith because of his faith. He says in Philippians chapter 1, I want you to know, brethren, talking about the persecution and imprisonment he faced, I want you to know, brethren, that the things which happened to me have actually turned out for the furtherance of the gospel, so that it has become evident to the whole palace guard and to the rest, that my chains are in Christ. And most of the brethren in the Lord, having become confident by my chains, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. He had courage, he had faith, and as a result, it stimulated the same type of conviction in his brethren. And as a result, it was spreading. And it wasn't just the church, it was the palace guard could see this. They could see, non-Christians could see. And here is a man who was suffering because of his faith in the gospel and his faith in Christ. You have that ability. You have the ability to influence your family for good. I look back at my mother, who was converted when I was 4 years old, and she brought up children, 6 children, but she brought us up, and we would travel 30 minutes one way going to church. And she did this as a married woman, but she was doing this on her own because my father wasn't a Christian. And so for years, that's how we were brought up. Years, you just did not miss church. We were always at services. And she was a person who tried to instill within us a respect for God and His Word, and of course, striving to live for Him. Now, as a result, at least her influence is felt not only in my life, but also in the next generation in some sense, because she was able to persuade other family members to have the same conviction in the Lord. And you can have that. I've seen that even in my own kids' lives with Stephanie and her faith, and how it has influenced them and how they think about certain things. And you, as women, can do that. You can change the way your children think about morality or the Lord's work, the gospel, the church, salvation, dress, whatever it might be. You have that ability. You have the ability to have an effect on someone's character and their behavior. Well, what I see here is we have the ability, one person, all it takes is one person who is willing to make a difference. I like what Helen Keller said. Of course, here's a woman who was extraordinarily talented. First woman or first person who was blind and deaf to earn a Bachelor's of Arts degree, and yet she says, "I am only one, but I'm still one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do." And that's a profound thought. Well, that's you. You can do something. You and I can do something in making a difference in the world around us. Positively, but also negatively. And that's where the story continues to develop with Esther. Because now you have a different character who's introduced in the story. And this is Haman. And Haman, of course, is this Persian prime minister who is arrogant to the core, is what it talks about in Esther chapter 3 and verse 1. And he was so arrogant that he demanded that these captives bow down to him when they saw him in public. And it talks about this in Esther chapter 3 in verse 2, beginning that the king's servants who were within the king's gate bowed and paid homage to Haman. For so the king had commanded concerning him, but Mordecai would not bow or pay homage. Then the king's servants who were within the king's gate said to Mordecai, "Why do you transgress the king's command?" Now it happened when they spoke to him daily, and he would not listen to them, that they told it to Haman to see whether Mordecai's words would stand. For Mordecai had told them that he was a Jew. When Haman saw that Mordecai would not bow or pay him homage, Haman was filled with wrath, but he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had told him of the people of Mordecai. Instead, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews who were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, the people of Mordecai. And that, of course, is how this story develops. That you have this arrogant prime minister who is so enraged that he decides to annihilate all these people, all because of his hatred that was spurred by Mordecai's reverence. And so this plot was decided to kill the Jews. What you see from Haman is another principle, one person. All it takes is one person to do much harm. One person was about to wipe out an entire nation, all because of his resentment for one person did that. One person was having that effect on an entire nation. And he was doing that because he was arrogant. He was worshiping himself, and he was a person who expected others to praise him, as we saw in verse 5. He was so absorbed with himself that when you keep reading the story and Esther develops this plan of revealing what's happening, and she has this private banquet for the king and for Haman, and his response to that was, Haman was, just how great he was. He went out that day joyful in chapter 5 and verse 9 with a glad heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate and that he did not stand or tremble before him, he was filled with indignation against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home, and he sent and called for his friends and his wife. Then Haman told them of his great riches, the multitude of his children, everything which the king had promoted him, and how he had advanced him above the officials and servants of the king. And so he's bragging on himself, and he's just worshiping himself. And of course, it seemed like the right interpretation with the queen inviting him to this private banquet. What we see from Haman is when you and I are so arrogant, that is, when we elevate ourselves and put ourselves above others and we resent others who don't feel that way about us, it's going to hurt other people. Pride always leads to destruction. That's what God wants us to know, that if we are arrogant, it will only lead to one thing, and that's to our demise. Pride always goes before a fall. And so anytime we're thinking more of ourselves than of others, or more highly of ourselves than we ought to think, there's only one fate. And that fate is something's going to happen to where we are humiliated and defeated. It's inevitable. And so pride is something that we should be people, or something that we as a people should avoid. One person. I love how it's stated in Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 18. One sinner destroys much good. All it takes is one. Well, you see that here with Haman. One man was about to wipe out millions of people because of his arrogance. Can you not make a difference in people's lives? One person. We see that the wise woman builds her house, but the foolish pulls it down with her hands. Proverbs 14 and verse 1. I've seen that. I've seen that not only with women, I've seen that with men. I've seen entire families affected by the ungodliness of their relative. One man was able to have a harmful effect on his children and even his grandchildren. I've seen that not only with men, I've seen that with women. I think of this one Christian woman who had made the decision to leave the Lord, to leave her husband. And we're pleading with her not to do this. You're a young woman. You put this, you go through this. It's inevitable. You're going to remarry. Because she was divorcing her husband. And it's only going to end in something sinful. No. I'm done with men. Not getting remarried. It's over. I'm just going to live a single life. She was a young woman. Well, it didn't take long. She not only had boyfriend after boyfriend, she eventually had boyfriend living with her, and then she eventually met someone else, and she married that person. And as a result, of course, it's adultery, the way Jesus defines it, but it had a negative impact on her children. And not only her children, it had a negative impact on her parents, who were persuaded to condone her behavior, along with her siblings, who are forced to condone her behavior. A wise woman builds up her house. She has a positive influence on her family for generations. But a foolish one, she pulls down her house. How can a woman go and pull down her house? Can you do that literally with your physical house? Can you just go pull it down as a woman? Absolutely not. But when you lose faith, and when you lose your conviction in the Lord, and when you lose that servant spirit, you are pulling your family down, and it's going to have an effect, even to the third generation. And so we have to be people who are wiser than that. Haman, one man, had a negative impact on an entire nation. But then the last thing to see is that one person, yeah, one person can help, one person can hurt, but one person can heal, can come to the rescue. And that's where Esther comes in. Because of this one woman's faith and her courage and her desire to do what's right, she was willing to confront the king. And in Esther chapter 4, she went in before the king and she revealed her identity. She revealed who she was. In Esther chapter 7, it says in verses 3 and 4, the queen Esther answered and said, "If I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request. For we have been sold, my people and I, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. Had we been sold as male and female slaves, I would have held my tongue, although the enemy could never compensate for the king's loss." So King Ahasuerus answered and said to the queen, "Who is he? And where is he? Who would dare presume in his heart to do such a thing?" Esther said, "The adversary and enemy is the wicked Haman." So Haman was terrified before the king and queen. And so she's revealing herself. She's letting it be known, King, please spare my life. Spare my people's life. Please have mercy on us. And the king, of course, says, why is this even an issue? We'll take care of him. Who's giving you grief? Who's giving you a hard time? Who's threatening your life? And of course, we see what happens. And as a result, we see that she was able to not only have this wicked man judged, but as a result, she was able to persuade the king to reverse that decree and save the nation. In Esther chapter 8, it says in verse 3, Esther again began to speak to the king, fell down at his feet and implored him with tears to counteract the evil of Haman the Agagite and the scheme which he had devised against the Jews. The king held out the golden scepter toward Esther, so Esther arose and stood before the king and said, If it pleases the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and the thing seems right to the king, and I am pleasing in his eyes, let it be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman. And it goes on to talk about that he said, you do as you want. And they did. So she and Mordecai and others worked to reverse this decision, and as a result, she spared her nation. And it was such a glorious moment that it became their 4th of July. It became their Day of Independence. Because, I mean, in effect, she had just stopped Hitler before he did his attack. She had that influence, that impact. And it says in Esther chapter 9, in verses 26 through 28, so they called these days Purim, after the name Pur. Therefore, because of all the words of this letter, what they had seen concerning this matter and what had happened to them, the Jews established and imposed it upon themselves and their descendants and all who would join them, that without fail they would celebrate these 2 days every year according to the written instructions, according to the prescribed time. And so they had this feast, and they still have this feast, to recognize what this woman did for her nation. I go back to that same point. You have the ability to have that kind of influence on people who know you. You have that ability to have that saving influence on your family, on this church. You have the ability to have that saving influence on the community. You have that ability. You can be an Esther for the people who know you. You might recall that a few years ago, the governor of Kentucky signed a bill that allowed school systems to develop curriculum and courses to teach the Bible, mainly as a historical book, because of its influence, of course, even on American history. And that was an option given to school systems because of this decision. But when you go back to that picture of when he's signing this into law, you'll look to the right of that picture and you see Mike and Barbara Pagan. And Mike and Barbara Pagan were people that we worshiped with in Owensboro for many years. We were there 8 years, 8.5 years. And they were members there. And then, they eventually moved after we moved, and they're in Louisville now, still faithful Christians. But they had influence in this. Now, they were people who were doing their part to spearhead this and to see its development. Members of the Lord's body, Christians. And I would say this is a positive thing. I would say it's a positive thing for God's word to be preserved in this nation, if not this state. But Christians were doing that. Christians were having that influence on our community. And you can do the same thing. You may be the very person who keeps the gospel alive in your family. You may be the very person who keeps the knowledge of the Lord's truth alive in your family, or even in this church or in the community. You may be that person. You may be the connecting piece of the truth being preserved in the people who know you. You might be that missing piece. And so we have to be people who understand that it's perhaps for a time like this that God has placed us. Perhaps he has put us in the spots we have in life so that we might stand up like Esther and have a direct influence for good in this world. Esther chapter 4, the heart of the book is found in verses 13 and 14. Mordecai told them to answer Esther, do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this. Who knows, Esther? Maybe God's made you queen so that you might save us as a people. It seemed reasonable, and it certainly seemed prophetic. What about you? You may be in the position you are in your family at this time for the express purpose of saving the truth and preserving it to those who know you. We can have that influence. It may be our righteousness that saves this community and as a result spares this nation. It might be our faith that does that. And let us be people who see that one person can make a difference. And so I share these thoughts with you, good friends. I appreciate your kind attention and consideration. You're doing something. You're either helping somebody become more like God or more like this world. You and I have that ability. And may God bless us. And may we have the wisdom to use this tremendous power God has given us to glorify His name. It could be that you're here tonight and that you have been thinking about your relationship with God and you're ready to start all over. And by the mercy of Christ, you can do that. Through His blood, you can find the forgiveness of sins. And if you're ready to contact that blood, you have to obey the gospel. And in doing that, you're dying to sin, you're buried with Him in baptism, and you're raised to walk in newness of life. It could be you've done that, but need to make things right with God. In a public way, humble yourself. God will lift you up. If it's a private thing, make it right. God will still be rich in mercy. If you're subject to the Lord's invitation, please respond as we stand and sing.